medical imaging, and wallet autopsies on this week's Insights in Nursing. Welcome back to another episode of Insights in Nursing. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, a.k.a. the host of the nursing show and a bunch of other programs out there on the web, and of course, all the things that are going on over at the ProMed Network. But of course, we're talking about Insights in Nursing and our panel discussion each week on a variety of topics in the nursing and healthcare news sphere during the course of that week. And I have my esteemed panel today with me. Of course, this is probably our original, I guess we can call this our original panel. We have Terry Pollack, who is the author of Nurse Ratched's Place blog. And Terry, welcome back again to Insights.
Thanks for having me.
And Kim McAllister from the Emergia blog.
Hi, Jamie.
How are you?
I'm doing okay. I can actually see now.
So we got some actual good comments in on a couple of topics that we've had over the recent weeks. I know I sent one out to you a couple of days ago from a listener that was checking in about our discussion about what to call a nurse who has a doctorate degree, doctor nurse, nurse doctor. And we had a listener check in on that, and she said basically that, or he said, I should say, basically that that a nurse has earned the right to say call themselves a doctor. That doctor represents the highest level of a degree track in a discipline, and does not represent a medical physician. And so he made that distinction and said that we should have the right to go by that, as should physical therapists and pharmacists and other medical professionals that have attained that level.
And I absolutely agree with that. You have the right, if you have earned your doctorate, to use the term doctor. And in an academic situation, there would be no confusion about whether or not you are a medical doctor, a nursing doctorate, a physical therapist with a doctorate. But for the most part, in day-to-day healthcare, if your patients don't know you very well, if you use the term Dr. Smith when you have a DNP or you have a PhD in nursing science, you run the risk of causing confusion in the patients as to exactly who's taking care of them and what services they can expect from you. So, absolutely, and I hope someday I get the right to use the title. Whether or not I'm going to use it specifically and call myself, well, I wouldn't call myself Dr. Smith because that's not my name, but whether I'm going to call myself, Dr. Kim or whatever, is going to depend on the situation that I'm in. Certainly, I would hope to have the designation on my name tag. I'm all about alphabet soup. But, I would definitely wear the designation. Whether or not I would actually use the designation in certain areas would be left to discretion as to how much confusion that's going to cause the those who are you're caring for.
And I know Lovely checked back in. She wasn't able to be on the show today, but she just checked in and said she's hoping to continue on to that level when she finishes her BSN. And she was saying she'd like to just have them call her by her first name. She hopes to have that kind of relationship with her patients. And so that was just her response. But I wanted to thank Andrew for checking in and sending that email. So anybody else that has a question or a comment or a suggestion or maybe a link for a future episode, you can send those in to us here at insightsinnursing@gmail.com. So send those emails in. And again, Andrew, thanks a lot for checking in on that. We got a number of people checking in about our education episode, just general thanks and comments of appreciation for that episode. And I know, Terry, you weren't on that available on that episode, but Kim was. And we just had a good time talking about where the future of nursing education is going, the push towards moving on in a degree path.
I enjoyed just listening in on it while I was on it. I learned so much. That was just a really good, really good panel, and I got much more out of that edition of Insights than I'm contributed. I'm sure that was just really good.
Sorry, I missed it.
Oh, you have to go back and listen. You can, of course, you can find all the episodes over at insightsinnursing.com.
Good segue, Terry. Okay.
Yeah.
I had to turn off the radio voice. I get back to being just Jamie. So
I don't know. That other guy sounds kind of cute.
Why, thank you.
Oh, let's not go there already.
Oh, my goodness. You know, people are picturing me with like a ventriloquist dummy on my lap. And
actually, which no, ones? That's not what I was picturing, but okay, thanks, Jamie. I will now.
I'm not a ventriloquist, so don't hire me to come in and perform at your hospital. You'll be very disappointed. Let's jump into the topics this week. A couple of good things I threw out there, and I know we've already had a little brief pre-show discussion on some of them, but I'll start off with a study recently that was published in the Journal of Radiology and was reported over at Medical News Today, talking about explosion of medical imaging, and that according to this study, over the last two decades, this study has found that this increase in medical imaging may be attributed to overuse, and that we should be cutting back on medical imaging. I know we've kind of touched on this at different points in the past, Kim, but and Terry, but certainly Terry, what are your thoughts about? Is this a surprise to anyone, especially the nurses out there?
When I read the article, I just yawned. I mean, of course we're using it more because it's more available. I mean, every little hospital now has their MRI machine and their CAT scan machine. I mean, originally hospitals had to rent the equipment because it was so expensive. So I think, like a lot of technology, the more it advances, the cost may have come down, and also, the patients expect it. So as the healthcare becomes consumer-driven, the hospitals are buying the equipment patients expect to have at the hospital. I mean, a lot of patients come in and they now, where before they would expect blood work and maybe an X-ray, now it's like, aren't you going to do a CAT scan? So it's more available, it's cheaper. And again, it's consumer driven. People want it, so they're getting it.
Plus, I wonder a lot about, you know, you can come in with your classic right lower quadrant pain, low grade fever, nausea. And in the old days, sometimes you went for surgery because you had suspected appendicitis, and sometimes that appendix was perfectly fine when they went in there. There was no way to know it. You could have all the signs and symptoms, but not necessarily have appendicitis. Conversely, you could have very few of the classic symptoms and actually have appendicitis. So what we see now in the ER, I'm using appendicitis as an example, is you've got X amount of symptoms. It's possible you could have an appendicitis. So you get sent, you know, drink your lovely contrast, you get sent to the CAT scanner. Well, not only do we find out whether or not you have appendicitis, but we also find out whether or not you have any other number of things that could be causing your discomfort. You know, are you suffering from diverticulitis? Do you have a bowel obstruction? So many things that you can get off a CAT scan. Even though technically you're trying to rule out appendicitis, but you get a lot of other things along with that that tells you either you don't have appendicitis and you do have this, or it rules out a lot of different potentially dangerous abdominal situations. So I'm wondering if, you know, is it overuse to say, okay, we're going to do a CAT scan because it's possible you have appendicitis. If I go to an emergency department and they look at me and they say, well, you know, right lower quadrant pain, white counts up a little bit, a little bit of nausea, well, we're going to watch and see. We're not sure if you have appendicitis or not. I'm like, hello, put me in the CAT scanner like yesterday. And I will say, I want that CAT scan because I want a definitive answer. And you have the capacity to give me, sorry for the phone, guys, you have the capacity to give me that definitive answer using the CAT scan. So I think we're seeing it used more because it's effective and it's available to be used.
I think that that's true. I think that there's ways that we can be using it appropriately, but this includes all levels of medical imaging, you know, from ultrasounds and CT scans and X-rays and all the other various scanning tools. And you're right, patients expect it, but it comes back to, do we just give the patient a lollipop because they ask for one because it'll make them feel better, or do we help them make an informed decision on whether or not it's always appropriate? And people expect us to be able to see inside their bodies like they think you can on CSI and watching all these TV shows out there that, you know, show this up close detail. And yet we all know that it's not that. It's a good science and it shows a lot of things, but it's not perfect.
You know, when I was...
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say when many, many years ago when I was expecting my first child, ultrasounds were brand new, absolutely brand spanking new. And now I guess anytime a woman goes to her OBGYN and she's pregnant, they're always, you know, doing the ultrasound, and they get the little baby picture and they get a whole series of them. Back then when the technology was new, my doctor didn't want to do any because, well, they didn't know what the long-term effects might be on the child. And now it's like a common occurrence. I mean, I went to a baby shower and the girl had a picture, a framed picture, baby's first picture, and it was an ultrasound image.
Are you serious?
Very serious. I said, where did you get this? And there's an imaging place right here in our town that specializes. It's sort of like a family portrait. I'm not kidding. Where they do the ultrasound, and then you can pick what view you want, and then they'll mat it and frame it and everything. It's the craziest thing. So
you know, and I wonder what's, and Jamie, you made a really good point. When I hear this, I automatically go to CAT scan, but in reality there's a lot of radiology, just basic films. You don't always need to have your ankle x-rayed just because you have twisted it. And I remember for a while there, we were going through, we called them the Ottawa rules, and they were really strict set of diagnostic tools that you could use on someone who came in with the sprained ankle that had a baseball size swelling on the side of it. And you actually could tell whether or not they needed an x-ray or whether this was a very basic but very painful sprain. And for the longest time, we're at the hospital I was working at the time, we actually utilized those. And if they met the criteria, they did not need to have an x-ray, and it was treated as a sprain would be treated. Now, and then all of a sudden it went the other way. And I think it was a case of the patients, they wanted that x-ray. They couldn't believe this giant ankle couldn't, and with the pain they were having, couldn't possibly have a fracture. So all of a sudden the ability to not x-ray ankles, because clinically the chances that this was fractured were minimal, we're no longer taken into account. And now everybody who sprains their ankle gets an ankle x-ray. It's just automatic. You come in, your ankle's swollen, you have pain, you get an x-ray. And I guess to the...
I was going to ask, do you think a lot of this could be driven by lawsuits?
Possibly. The majority of the ones I see, some are slip and fall type things. But for the most part, I see them in sports. Basketball is probably the worst contact sport you could imagine. You would think it would be football, but it's basketball. And people are always coming down playing sports and twisting their ankle. All ages, not just kids and you know, in high school. But that's mostly what I see. So I don't get the impression that at least extremity injuries are based on potential lawsuits. But certainly that must drive a little bit of it. I wonder if it drives the practitioner's use mm-hmm. more than it drives the patient's request. I think kind of like me and my appendix, you know, give me the definitive answer. Well, maybe to someone with that ankle, they want the definitive answer. They want to know, did I break this ankle or not? And, you know, they kind of feel the same way I felt about the CAT scan. It's hard to say. All I know is when in doubt, take a picture of it. I mean, that seems to be the big thing that we do.
And it does provide that second opinion without having to get the actual second opinion. I mean, you know, the doctor suspects that this is the case and looks at, you know, and then says, and here's the x-ray to prove it, or whatever the case may be, whether you're looking at pneumonia or, you know, whatever. I think that when it becomes overused is if there's excessive follow-up, if the treatment of the patient would not change regardless of what the imaging showed or not showed, it may not be necessary. If all you're going to do is treat the symptoms anyway, then it may not be necessary to know 100% one way or the other for certain types of things. But
that is actually true. And the nice thing is, at least in my facility, the doctors will say that, you know, they'll say, look, we could do XYZ radiology study, but it's not going to change the way we're going to go forward from here. We're going to treat this the same way if it's A or B, and getting the CAT scan is only going to, you know, take more time and really not lead us to any better of a diagnosis. And if you get a good doc, and I work with some good ones, then, you know, they let the patient know that. And the patients are usually fine with that. It's like, well, if it's not going to tell us anything, I don't want to go through it. You know, that sort of thing.
Do you think there's room for abuse here? And this is not applying to every facility, but there are for-profit healthcare systems out there that would it be inappropriate of me to say that there might be an incentive to set up a system of protocols for certain types of injuries and illnesses that would encourage the use of imaging as an additional billing cycle?
That doesn't seem to make any sense to me, because it seems to me these days you don't get paid for what those scans are worth or what those x-rays are worth. Maybe it happens, but I've seen more the opposite, where it's their nonprofit or their health maintenance organizations, and there's an actual incentive to use less of the facilities and hold down the use to hold down the cost. I wonder, you know, if you're a for-profit facility and you're doing all these tests, just how much do you get reimbursed for them? I can't imagine it would be full cost these days.
Having worked in a facility that was a for-profit hospital center, I was very corporation. I was very surprised by some of the things that, you know, I overheard as far as policies coming down from on high, and when you started to read between the lines, you could easily see that, you know, all patients that were likely to have some kind of insurance were more likely to get admitted based upon certain policies.
Right.
You know, if you're a Medicare patient, you know, despite the fact that you'd be better treated at home, you're encouraged to admit that patient because that patient can stay the night and for quote unquote observational purposes or, you know, associated with the illness that they have, whatever case may be, to when they could just as easily go home and follow up with primary care the next day. And that's something that is just not necessarily that it was abused in this situation, because it still fell to the physician to make that medical determination. But if there is an encouragement to say, you know, this is what we'd like to see, because we think these patients have a need to be monitored more closely, it could be a problem.
Yeah, your experience is a little bit different than mine. Terry, I don't know about you, but I've never worked in a for-profit facility.
I have. And actually, I had a personal experience where I went to a doctor and they wanted to do an MRI of my feet. And the doctor, and I don't know, because I'm kind of... older and have gray hair. I think they assumed I was kind of stupid or something, because I knew the doctor had an interest in the imaging center across the street from his office. And his office staff wrote me a prescription to go get this MRI done. And I thought that was kind of strange, but he's like, no, no, we really need to have this done. A CAT scan won't blah, 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 whatever. His office staff told me I had to go across the street and use that facility across the street, because the prescription was only good for that facility across the street. Every red flag went up in the back of my head. I knew that was bogus. Ugh. I could go to any place that I wanted to go. Secondly, I thought, MRI for my feet. What? What? Really? No, I don't think so. So I left there, got a second opinion, and the doctor just looked at me like, you're kidding, right? You're kidding. So anyway, I think he did a wallet autopsy. I think they saw that I had good federal insurance, and I think he wanted to cash in.
A wallet autopsy. Oh, dear.
Oh, well, that's going in the bin as possible title of the show. Wallet autopsy. Huh?
I can't believe I've never heard that before. That's hilarious.
This is why we do the show, because I hear new things, you hear new things. We all have our own way of talking, and of course, Terry is a force unto herself.
Indeed, thank you.
You are so welcome. Well, you know, we've autopsied that dead horse long enough. Let's go ahead and.
The segues are just rolling.
Let's see. Let's take this next one and get out of the gate here. If we're going to stay in the horse motif. This is an article that's coming out of the UK, and of course, the National Health Service in the UK is a national program in providing health care. So all of their public hospitals are affiliated and work together. But there's some alarming news coming out based on a recent survey or a recent study looking at patients. And this is that elderly, frail patients who come into the hospital are more likely to leave now malnourished than they might have been when they arrived. And, you know, the headline is startling. Frail elderly patients left to starve in the hospitals. It's alarming. It caught my eye. So they did their job, I guess, writing the headline. But it is, you know, it is something. If patients need assistance to eat and you don't have the staff to assist them, how are they going to get their food?
Yeah, they're not, apparently. They looks like they have, they say family is actually bringing in, it's not so much the food's not available, it's just that they're not, there's not enough people to feed, to assist in feeding. So I love this little data they have here. 175,000 patients enter the hospital malnourished, but 185,000 leave malnourished. So they're looking at 10,000 cases of malnutrition directly caused by the hospital stay. When I first saw this, I thought this was, they meant nursing homes. And now I'm seeing that they mean the actual acute care hospitals.
Well, and it's alarming. I mean, because, and it's not hard for me to see how this happens. First of all, I have an elderly parent. I have two elderly parents, but my mother will kill me for saying she's elderly. she's still playing, golf every single day and is incredibly active. But my dad's in his mid-80s and is getting frail, more and more frail each time, we get together. And he stays with us for a period of time on occasion. And it's difficult to overcome his lack of appetite at times. And he's not, he doesn't feel good, doesn't feel like eating. And he doesn't necessarily require assistance, but he does require monitoring and urging. And he currently lives on his own in a facility that will eventually step him down to a nursing home situation. My sisters and I are struggling with, does he need somebody to check in on him? He gets a meal is included in his apartment rent every day. So he generally eats dinner with other residents. We all know that there are people that need to be reminded to maintain their levels of nutrition. And for the elderly, it's especially important because they don't have their big functional reserve of sub-Q fat that a lot of that younger people tend to have. So how do you encourage the elderly person who, even if they can feed themselves, to eat the complete meal, especially hospital food?
Yeah. And a lot of times, when I'm looking at the article, they're talking about, almost being too weak to sort of pick up the fork. But nutrition is such a big, big part of nursing care. It's a challenge, especially when you're dealing with the elderly and older patients, to get them, their taste buds aren't like they used to be. They don't have the energy. They just don't, maybe there's some depression involved. Maybe they're just weak. And it takes more, it sounds like more personnel, aka nurses, to encourage it. It's a challenge, even in a good situation. But this just sounds like they don't have the staff. But here's something that really gets me. Last month, now this is the Mail Online. I'm not familiar with British newspapers, but I'm wondering if the Mail isn't kind of a little bit of a, I don't know, sensationalistic. It says, last month, the Mail revealed that nurses were having to be reminded by NHS bosses that it is part of their job to feed frail patients and check for bed sores. It's like, hello, that's basic nursing care.
I was going to say, we have to be reminded.
Well, and the Mail just revealed this because those NHS bosses, God forbid these nurses won't do their job if the NHS bosses don't tell them what to do. That's kind of insulting. I mean, according to this article, either the, God help me, I don't believe this for a minute, but the nurses in England are either extremely incompetent or this is just a highly sensationalized article here, taking what's already known as a common issue with the elderly and then turning it into something that's probably a lot sensationalized, because I can't believe that my colleagues in the United Kingdom are absolutely not doing their job and letting patients suffer like that. I just, it's hard for me to believe it's happening on this scale.
I agree. I think it's probably not as bad as it, we all know the media tends to blow things out of proportion and make a mountain out of a molehill, but it is an issue. I mean, anybody out there that is a nurse or has worked as a nurse at any time in their lives is aware that this is a problem. And I wonder how many of these 10,000 patients that have had their malnutrition caused, or I shouldn't say caused, but happen or occur during their hospital stay. Because, if they came into the hospital for abdominal surgery and they were NPO for a period of time, they're not going to necessarily have received a whole lot of nutritional support prior to their discharge, but the expectation would be they'd go home and resume eating their normal diet.
Yeah, and kind of make up for that,
mm-hmm.
for that period of being NPO and maybe not being able to take. I mean, you can only get so much nutrition from an IV unless you go through TPN, and not everybody, you know, not everybody needs that for the brief period of time that they're in the hospital. So yeah, I would assume that after you left the hospital, and I don't know how long they stay in the NHS, but here you don't stay in the hospital very long, usually, that you would then be able to go home and resume, you know, what your normal eating habits were. It sounds, you know, each person is so individual that maybe the issue here is that there's not enough staff to make sure, right. Not enough nurses to make sure that the needs are being met. Not that the nurses are willfully just ignoring their duties.
Well, and I think that's the case. I mean, nurse staffing is an issue in the UK as much as it is anywhere. When they talk about, you know, numbers of nurses to patients and the ratios, and I hate to talk about ratios because that's such a hot button issue here in the States. And you know, everybody has their own number that they throw out there is what ratios should be. But it certainly there is, you know, every nurse knows when they're overworked to the point that they aren't, that they're worrying about patient safety. And
right.
And that's the point at which another nurse needs to be brought into that unit.
Right.
Terry?
Well, it takes a lot of time to feed a patient. When I was a brand new nursing student, one of my instructors said, you have to think about it like this. How long does it take you to sit down and eat a meal? Maybe a half hour. That's what they give us, you know, for a break. But if you're elderly, if you've had a stroke, if you're weak and you know, just all the symptoms of being ill, you know, throw that on top of not having an appetite, whatever. I mean, to properly feed an elderly patient who's not well, you're looking at an hour to sit there and spoon feed someone to make sure they don't choke, that they eat all their food. You know, the whole thing. And who has an hour when you have 10 patients?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I know from my experiences long time ago when I worked in a nursing home, almost everybody needed, that wasn't in the dining room and eating autonomously, needed to have their meals given to them and needed that assistance. But I would say, yeah, a minimum of half an hour. So it kind of makes you wonder, in that case, is this a case where you could actually bring in people that is their job is to sit and help feed patients during meal times? Just as an idea.
Well, I think let's move on a little bit. It certainly is basic nursing care. I think we all can agree on that in assessing assessing patients for their level of nutritional intake and also, you know, determining if they need assistance and trying to provide and working to provide that assistance in some way. Even if it's a family member, you know, adjusting the meals and the family visit schedules so that they can help out with that is just, you know, basic, like you said, Kim, nursing 101.
Exactly.
So here's an interesting story, and this is out of California. So I'll see what your thoughts are on this one.
Oh, dear. There we go.
Well,
bunch of crazy people out. So,
well, and apparently, some people were trying to get a CE credit for just attending a political rally.
Yeah, I'm not okay. This is my union, all right? I'm not using the term professional organization. It is my union. It's the California Nurses Association. And I have, they do some really admirable work in terms of legislation, such as for me in this state, dealing with the nurse-patient ratio, really working to get nurses to have decent work environments. So they do some good work. They are the absolute antithesis of me politically. So I read about these basically here. We would find that, and I saw this, there was a celebration of the women's right to vote, which kind of sounded fun. And I get all the literature on it. And yet when you go to these seminars, all of a sudden they become political rallies. And one thing you'll see a lot of in California are nurses with, picket signs and political placards and all this. And that's fine if that's, you know, if that's the side you're on. Well, I hate to use that term, but if that's your belief system and that's which how you think you can get your point across, then great. But a lot of these nurses, according to this article, were showing up and were then being what they thought was a seminar or a celebration turned into a protest / political rally. Now, I can't personally talk to them because when CNA has a political rally, I don't go. You know, that's just me. And I guess they're saying that they were told that they could get CE for attending these things. So, you know.
Well, and they don't say exactly who. I mean, the article talks about, it made me laugh when I read it because I'm, you know, everybody's hot for finding new and interesting ways to get their CE credit in. But the apparently there was some nurses felt that they were pressured to try to be there, and some were told that they could get CE credit, and this was brought to the attention of lawmakers. But it doesn't say anywhere that who said they were going to get CE credit. And the article ultimately says that lawmakers could find no one who actually got CE credit for any political rally. So it seems like a whole lot of mess for nothing. But they had a hearing about it, and.
Oh, there's always a hearing about something. It says there was a 4-hour advocacy course before the rally. And for the flyer actually said that 4-hour course on advocacy was good for up to 8 CEUs. But they said on that flyer, the protest and rally were also listed. So, you know, I kind of being from California and belonging to CNA, I kind of know what I'm going to get if I see that stuff. And it says that the courses have to be clinically applicable to patient care. So I can't believe it says if you're going to offer CE courses, I'm looking at a state senator here from Chino, a Democratic state senator, says if you're going to have CE classes, offer them on another day, not on a day that you're having a rally. Because, and who knows, I mean, to give CNA the benefit of the doubt, maybe, they expected the rally to be of one thing, and then you get a lot of like-minded people, like-minded politically, and it turns into something else, and I'm really stretching the line out for them there. But like I said, you know, good for you, CNA. I make really good money and I have excellent working conditions and I don't get my vacations taken out from under me, like some of us do.
Poor Terry.
But, yeah, no, but that's, you know, that's, they get over $1,000 a year from every single nurse who belongs to CNA and we're required to belong. So I can't look at CNA and say, hey, look, you know what? I love what you've done for me in my work environment and what you do for patients. However, I absolutely don't agree with anything else that you do politically, and I don't want my funds used for that. So I don't think I should have to pay, you know, $1,000 a year. Well, there's no way of having a required membership because of what they do for you in your hospital. I did call them and I was told once that, okay, well, we'll just designate we'll designate your membership dues as going just for the general fund, which means it'll pay for office rent and lights and that sort of thing. I never got anything official telling them or stating that that's exactly what it goes for, but they're dealing with a lot of money. And I do believe, well, now I'm getting way off now.
But I'll tell you, there's a lot of unions moving out there to advocate for nurses. And you make an interesting point, Kim, that those unions provide benefits, benefits to the nurses that they represent. But there are, of course, two sides to everything, and there may be political differences for some of the causes they get behind.
And unfortunately, and you can't pick and choose which funds you want your membership funds to go for, which issues. And there, what that was on the ballot a few years back, where it was going to have to be, where CNA was going, well, unions in general in California were going to have to go to their membership with individual issues. You know, how about this? How about this? How about this? And boy, they shot that down faster than anything. And that's about the time I called and said, you know, I'm not happy that you're spending my dues on this particular issue. Oh, no problem. We'll just put your funds into the general fund. But that's because this thing was going to be on the ballot in 2 weeks, where they had to come for permission for each individual issue that they were dealing with. So I'm sure I'm just getting myself into a whole mess of trouble with this. But that's kind of, as a registered nurse, required to be a member of CNA, that's where I stand. They make a ton of money. And I can guarantee you that they're making at least twice, if not three times as much as I make as a staff nurse, the management of CNA. It's a doozy.
Well, and I, you know, it might be different state to state. I think Maryland, my sister is a teacher, and she has to belong to the Maryland State Teachers Association. And she, I think, is able to designate where her funds go. And that might be a state by state difference, you know, in how those union dues are handled political promotion. I think she has some. I think each year it's like an insurance thing. You check off where you want your money to go for different things.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. No, that's definitely not, how CNA works. So I guess it's CNA NOC now, NNOC.
Yep.
National Nurses Organizing Committee. Yeah. And I mean, I've been a member of CNA since the old days. And when it was still part of the ANA and it was still a professional organization as opposed to a union. Which is basically what it is now. It's a political union. Kind of sad, actually, but, you know, what can I say?
It's interesting because I wonder, this is an important topic because a lot of nurses are seeing, you know, the NNOC coming in. I know they're very active in the Northeast and Massachusetts and other parts of New England. So I'm interested. I'd be interested to hear from some of the listeners' thoughts on this. Again, you know, that email is insightsinnursing@gmail.com because you're not the only one that feels that way, Kim. And it's interesting that you have that, you know, the bipolar response, if you will.
Absolutely. And I can't, you know, when I get that paycheck, and it comes time to renegotiate those contracts with the hospital. There, I mean, good things happen with that, and as in that regard. So it's so hard for me to say, well, I'm really ticked off at them for this, when I have worked at non-CNA represented hospitals, and they just do just enough that they have to do to maybe keep you from going to another facility. No non-CNA hospital I have ever worked at ever has met the wonderful benefits that you get through their negotiations for you with your facility. And so people who have, you know, CNA not coming into their hospitals, or they're just now seeing this organization or wondering about this organization, in terms of the day-to-day functioning as a staff nurse, bless them. And yet, absolutely, if you are any, look at their politics, because you may not think like they do, but when you pay your dues, you pay your money, you're going to get what they give politically.
Terry, I know we don't have nurse unions here in Maryland area, where we are in the Mid-Atlantic region, at least in Maryland. But you're working for a federal facility, so it may be, I'm sure it's even completely different.
We don't have any representation, but my father was a union organizer many, many years ago, and he said that if facilities want to keep unions out, it's very easy to do. You just treat your employees with a lot of respect and treat them well. So fortunately, I guess, I work in an environment where I really don't feel the need to be represented by a union, at least at this time, other than the fact that my vacation got taken away. But that's another story. But
poor Terry, I feel so bad.
Oh, I shouldn't
have brought that up. You know, that would never have happened. well, it might not be a union versus non-union. It may just be more of a case of the type of facilities that we work at. Whereas you work at UGG, what is it? Undisclosed Government Hospital. Are you still referring to it as UGG? And, it's a different, work environment, or it's a different ambiance. There's just different things expected from us because we work in different types of facilities. So
the focus at our hospital, they call it mission driven. There is a mission that our people need to accomplish, and the entire focus is on that mission. So if the needs of the mission come before your own needs, and you go into that with that understanding. So,
if the mission is accomplished, do you get to stand under a big sign?
You mean on a ship? Mission accomplished?
I did that. Oh, my. I got a kick out of that.
I was going to say, I'm surprised you even brought that up, Kim.
Oh, I just thought it'd be funny.
Would you send me a sign?
We conservatives have a sense of humor, too, you know.
You do? Oh, my goodness. I had no idea.
Well, you did. You kept voting for Bush.
Oh, all right. Now, listen, we agreed when we started doing this show how many months ago we were not going to go down this path.
No, we can go down dominatrix paths, but we can't go down political paths. You know?
That's right. Okay. Dominatrix lane is just fine, but we're going to stay off of the political highway. Oh, my goodness.
Well, when I stand under the sign, can I wear my leather?
Absolutely.
Oh, honey, you can wear your leather anytime you want. Now we got leather. We got dominatrix. We got, furniture fetishes. I mean, turn into insights, man. You'll get all kinds of information you didn't expect.
If you didn't think your nurses were a little odd, you're now really wondering wondering what's going on in our brains, why we do what we do.
What's wrong with the furniture fetish? Is there a problem with that?
No, but you always seem to have floods.
I do. I can't help it.
You and furniture and you and floods. I'm not quite sure what's going on.
You know, we have a hurricane coming.
Yeah, we do.
What is this, Evan? Or
his name is Earl.
Earl.
Yeah. If you look at the satellite imagery out in the Atlantic, there's a hurricane wearing a blue shirt with a name tag that says Earl on it. And he'll come into the mid-Atlantic coast here soon and change everybody's oil and head back out to sea.
Who names these things? Earl? Oh, God. Everett or Ebony or, any sort of distinguished thing, but Earl?
Earl.
Earl? Here comes Earl.
You can actually go on the weather.com site. I think they have a link to the storm centers. They have like those lists out 5 years, so you can actually see what the next 5 years of names are going to be.
Well, nothing's going to beat Earl.
Well, yeah, we'll see if Earl lives up to his expectations.
Well, I got the sump pumps ready.
There you go. Well, we've moved from a variety of topics here today, and perhaps it's because we're talking about hurricanes and not nursing, it's a sign that we should wrap up this week's episode.
Yeah, you didn't expect you to get insights into hurricane naming.
That's
when
right.
We'll
be.
In, did ya?
That's right. Insights in hurricanes on this week's.
I want Hurricane Kim.
Oh, that would be great.
honey, watch out if that ever comes
around.
That's
a hurricane for you.
That comes around every day, let me tell you, at least around here, my poor husband. All right.
Menopause, we understand.
Oh, tell me about it. Like Marie Osmond said when I saw her the other night on her show, she said, men are on pause. So that's my definition of menopause.
There you go. I have nothing to say. I think I've said that before.
You're on pause, Jamie.
I can lend nothing to this discussion.
Somewhere along the line, you lost total control of this podcast.
It seems to happen quite frequently.
Oh, well, I'm going to tell you, once we close off the session, I'm going to Starbucks because pumpkin spice lattes are back.
They're back.
So now we've gone from dominatrix and furniture and unions to pumpkin spice lattes.
Yep.
That's how I roll.
Oh, and I forgot to mention, we were talking about CEs. I was going to bring up, the nursing the nursing podcast cruise is still out there. You can go to nursingatsea.com and check out the nursing cruise. There is an associated continuing education seminar session. It's going to be built into it. So we'll have about eight hours of continuing education along the way. But it's really going to be the rest of the, 160-odd hours that you're going to be on this cruise for 7 days is going to be just pure fun and relaxation. You don't have to do the conference if you don't want to. You can just come out on the cruise with us. And so I urge you to check that out. We've got really good pricing over there, and really I'm very happy with that. You can find out how to contact the person, the travel agent we're dealing with, and we're looking forward to that coming up in January. So check it out, nursingatsea.com, and let them know you heard it here on Insights in Nursing, and maybe we'll be able to meet some of your favorite nursing podcasters coming up in January.
Ooh.
and maybe Terry, if you can make it, they won't take away your vacation.
That would be nice. I'll go if you wear a Speedo.
I think that everyone on the cruise, including safety inspectors for the cruise ship, would probably say that's not a good idea.
Terry, I just had my LASIK. I don't want to undo what I just did. I went through a lot of pain to be able to see goodness. This clearly. Don't That's make right. me go back.
I think we have nothing to worry about. My wife is coming along, and there's no way she'll ever let me out of the cabin in a Speedo.
Ooh, now in that case, maybe we need to know why.
Believe me, it's this man's on pause. No, I'm not even going there. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, dear.
Kim, where can we find you?
Oh, I'm always at emergyblog.com, and on Twitter, I'm emergyblog.
And Terry, how about you?
On Twitter, I'm Mother Jones, RN, and you can find me at nurseratchetsplace.com when I'm not lurking in furniture stores.
Lurking in furniture stores. So if you're in the Maryland region, Maryland, Northern Virginia, whatever region, and you happen to see someone lurking in a furniture store, it might be Terry. All right, and I have nothing else to say. I'm just going to close the show because we're just, who knows where we'll end up. I'm Jamie Davis. You can find me under the handle Podmedic, at Podmedic on Twitter, Facebook.com/Podmedic. And of course, you'll find my other shows and all of the other great medical programs from people like Dr. Anonymous and great other programs like Paul Bond's Emergency Nursing Today podcast and The Nursing Show, my other show, over at the ProMed Network, promednetwork.com. You can get back in touch with us and find links to all the topics we've discussed in this episode, as well as links back to our panelists over at insightsinnursing.com. And of course, don't forget to email us with any comments, questions, suggestions, corrections, complaints, whatever it is, get a hold of us, insightsinnursing@gmail.com. That's it. We'll be back again next week with another episode. In the meantime, don't forget, stay safe and stay tuned here to Insights in Nursing.
Let me ask you this. Have either of you heard the term refrigerator nurse?
No.
No.
Oh,
is that
dear.
A large ex-football player nurse?
God, I am so old.
No. This is great. You should make a list of these terms and see if anybody else has heard of them.
a refrigerator nurse. Back in the day when people could support a family on one income, a married lady who was a nurse would occasionally go back to work for the extras for the family. And one of the big luxury extras back in the day was a new refrigerator. You know, an appliance. Obviously not from Sears.
Oh.
Don't get me started on Sears. But anyway, that nurse was frequently referred to by her coworkers as a refrigerator nurse.